If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
And joining us now to talk about this is Siphesihle Zwane, Portfolio Manager at Allan Gray. A very good evening to you, Siphesihle. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Good evening to you and your listeners, and thank you for listening.
So we're talking about the SA listed properties. So what has been the environment in recent times, if we're saying that there is a light at the end of the tunnel despite the turmoil?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at the share prices, it's all interest rates generally, because property businesses tend to be quite geared or they have quite a lot of debt. But the way we think about it is actually look at the underlying. I mean, when you buy a company, you're buying a basket of stuff. So in a property sense, you're buying a basket of properties, and we look at the underlying and how they're trading. So there's been some changes. So I guess in the retail space, for one, we look at like rentals. So are rentals going up? There's a contractual escalation, and then at the end of a contract, let's say 4 or 5 years, you'll have a negotiation again. So that number has been going up. So they call it reversions. Rental reversions have been more positive than in the past. And then there's other things that have been improving. So like less load shedding and stuff is quite good for the industry. So when we look at it, there's a little bit of light. Interest rates are the main thing that drives share prices, it seems. And the underlying operations have improved quite a bit as well.
Mm. So I just want to establish, are we still looking at the sector as a wealth creator, or has it lost a bit of its shine?
Yeah, you know, one of our colleagues always says that you must always be careful of industries where you make a lot of money, because it can taint your thinking. So in South African investment circles, listed property was like massive wealth creator in the early 2000s for a few reasons, right? So you had like high interest rates starting and then coming down all the time. You had retail growth, so incredible retail growth, shop rights opening everywhere, spa stores opening everywhere. And then you had these companies that were able to take advantage of that quite well. So they tended to trade at a premium to their net asset value, so that's their asset versus their liabilities, and then they raised capital in the markets at what we call cheap cost of equity. So that changed quite a bit around 2018, 2017, and a lot of that call it financial engineering benefit that they had of trading in high premiums and then being able to raise money quite easily went away, and now all of a sudden everyone's looking at the underlying performance of the properties rather than, you know, underlying performance of properties and some cheap cost of capital as a sweetener on top. So a big difference to the past. Now it's about the underlying fundamentals, which are not as great as they were in the early 2000s, but not horrible as well. So yeah, I think it's a big difference. I think it's almost like a very different industry from the early 2000s. It's very different when you look at it and the things you need to think about.
But for someone listening, what would you say are the unique features and benefits of real estate investment trusts for investors?
So I guess the one is, you know, people like hard assets. So you get a basket of hard assets that are tradable, in effect. So you get access to properties. Every year they revalue the properties for what they're worth. And then REITs and a lot of property companies try to pay out a lot of their earnings to investors. And it can be some tax benefits in the REITs on legislation. But at the same time, pros and cons there. So, you know, a normal listed business tends to retain a decent amount of cash to reinvest. These listed businesses or listed property businesses tend to pay out almost all of their free cash flow, which makes it very difficult for them to grow or spend capital when prices aren't going up. So when I say when prices aren't going up, they'll lend on their balance sheets versus the asset values or on income. So if you're growing very fast, you can borrow more money, you can spend more and grow more faster. It's a nice virtuous cycle. And when that changes, that's a big difference as well. So yeah, I think the main benefits is you get access to hard assets and the cash flows that the hard assets generate.
As we're talking about the difficulties that the industry has been experiencing, I want to look at the one thing. I mean, if we talk about COVID, We saw an oversupply of office space, but that trend is moving. I mean, it's changing. We see that a lot of people are moving back to their offices. But there's also a change in the real estate and construction industry, re-looking at office spaces and what they should look like. So it obviously says there are disadvantages, but there are also benefits if one calculates correctly.
Yeah, office space was a real tough industry, right? So what businesses tend to do is they think, okay, we're growing quite fast now, and You know, we build for 5 years, 10 years in advance. And, you know, if you look at, say, the Sandton CBD, there's a lot of very fancy, weirdly shaped buildings that a lot of big corporates build under hopes of growth. And then I guess when you don't get that growth, then when you have things like COVID and people start to work from home, you have massive vacancies. So how do you fix vacancies? It's a tricky thing, right? Because vacancies tend to be a supply and demand thing. So what tended to happen in a lot of office space is that the rentals came down a lot. To incentivize people to be willing to come back into the office. Some people increase the break spaces, so bigger kitchens, more, you know, places to play pool or to play table tennis, whatever it is in different offices, to fill up the space. And then, you know, you get the work from home. Some of that has turned back as well going forward. But I think also a big difference is that, you know, you see it in cities over long terms, that you get nodes that change, right? So you have a few offices in the Joburg CBD, you know, the Anglo-American building used to be there, and now they moved to Rosebank, for example. So what tends to happen is everyone goes to the newer, more shiny, great buildings and then leave some of the older buildings, which can also be very bad for cities longer term. So it's a, you know, it's a very difficult thing to fix long term. Some people try to convert them to homes as well, but you can't do that for every office. So what we think there with office space, supply and demand tends to fix itself. With pricing and then some conversions. And then long term, you need some growth. So you need economic growth to fill up the office space again. And you need bosses to tell people to come back to work, which obviously varies from different company to company.
So let's continue talking about that logistics, especially in light of online shopping. What has been the impact of that? And if you could also just speak about the role of technology and design and how people are trying to mitigate some of those challenges.
Yeah, so obviously the office space is one of the subsectors that have struggled a bit more, coming out of COVID. And on the flip side, you think things like logistics has done better. And I guess the more things are moved in between cities and in between towns and from, you know, boxes to people, you think the more logistics becomes important, and having efficient logistics systems become very, very, very important. So, you know, to get the fresh vegetables from Woolies, you have to have lots of distribution centers everywhere. And they have to work perfectly. So businesses that were able to invest in high quality distribution centers have done quite well, usually close to like travel nodes or close to ports or close to highways. And you think the theme of technology helps as well, right? As turnover on things grow, then you think you need to move more things around. But, you know, it's the technology can be a pro and a con. So if you look at, you know, retail property in the UK, for example, where online retailing increased quite a bit, they struggle quite a bit, but I think South Africa might be a bit different, where click and collect is a bigger part of how we do things. So, you know, you might buy something online and go pick it up, or, you know, you might order and the fulfillment might actually happen in the mall still. So probably, I think technology probably impacts us less than the developed world for now, and it helps in certain subsegments of property. So it helps in the logistics space more than anything else.
So if we were to do some navel gazing and say, what are the primary, you know, long-term fundamental drivers for the sector, what would you say they are, especially given the concerns around, you know, the inflationary environment?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you have to look at only two metrics, or I guess even three. So I think the most important ones are retail sales or sales in general. So that's economic growth driven, and then occupancy costs, right? So at the end of the day, a property is a space or a market created for someone to do an economic activity, right? So a mall is a place for you to sell whatever it is that you sell. And as long as the tenant is able to afford, you know, being in your market. So if their sales are going up by more than your rentals plus the cost of being there, so like water and electricity, then you'll do quite well. So you'll have your contractual escalations. At the end of the contract, everyone will be happy. They'll be willing to pay up a little bit more because the space allows for the activity, the main activity, to happen. So that's the one thing we look at. We look at retail sales for in a retail specifically, and we look at other costs. So things like administered costs, so water, electricity. And then the third thing is obviously interest rates. But I guess the important thing to think about is that at Allen Gray, the way we look at investments is we look at it versus other things, right? So do you have to buy a property relative to other things? So if you think interest rate goes down, maybe banks do better than property. So it is a trade-off relative. And I think the more important things are the first two things I said. So the cost of doing the thing and how well the thing actually gets done in your space.
Just finally, is an investment property still something to do, you know, in these uncertain times, and especially for first-time homeowners?
Yeah, this was my interview question years ago. And I think the answer to that is depends. The important thing is to always take a view. So to take a view on the note, to take a view on what you think is going to happen to the value of the property, what you think is going to happen to rentals over time. And then to compare that to, you know, putting your money in the unit trust as well. I mean, the beauty of investment property is that you get very cheap debt. So if you choose a property that's going to grow quite well, and you go to the bank and you have a good interest rate, you get leverage, a leverage return there. So that's the main beauty versus putting it in a unit trust. But the very important thing is to have a view. So like any other investment, to have a view on what's the long-term fundamentals of the property, the node, the cash flows, how interested are people going to be, and then the cost as well, right? So how much is it actually going to cost me to maintain the property? So like most investment questions, it depends on a lot of the underlying drivers.
Sipe Sihle Zwane from Allan Gray, thank you so much. Much appreciated. Portfolio manager at Allan Gray, just speaking to us about the conditions in the property market at the moment. So with over five decades of investing experience, Allan Gray remains focused on building long-term wealth for its clients by pursuing long-term returns without taking undue risk. Allan Gray, more than 50 years of long-term investing. Allan Gray is an authorized FSP.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.